Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis. With attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. The Chair...
March 25th, 2019. Good evening, everybody, as we are live on the Chairshot Radio Network with the Raw Reaction. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
What up, Ho?
And the line in the sand, Andrew Belaz.
Hooray, it's Monday again.
And again. Have you ever had a feeling of deja vu? Awfully familiar tonight, did it not?
Yes, extremely.
Some of it a little bit more so than others. What didn't feel familiar is we actually got a very short opening segment tonight, Tony. Rousey comes out, delivers a few words, and it's right into the Beat the Clock Challenge. Ronda's promo, if you could call it that, because it really wasn't much of one, lasts 5 minutes with three mic drops and made zero fucking sense. Tony, your thoughts?
Well, that was eloquent, Tony. You want to try that again so that the dogs, more than just the dogs, can hear you?
What was the question that was asked?
The Ronda Rousey segment. You're starting from the top.
Oh, I was putting my headphones on. I didn't hear. So
I was just asking about the fact that we had 5 minutes, three mic drops, and not a whole fucking lot made sense.
Okay, well... Yeah, I mean, I get the idea of the whole mic drop and then picking it up is supposed to, like, annoy us. But it was one of those things that came off as really stupid, thereby making Ronda look stupid. And nobody wants to look stupid. And then you have the whole Beat the Clock Challenge. And although I don't remember every single match that's ever happened, I'll leave that to Harry. I'm pretty sure Beat the Clock is usually for something significant. Typically,
yes.
It's... bigger prize than pride. So what was the ultimate goal here other than to try to, you know, show off, I guess you could say? I'm not too upset about it, mainly because Becky got to, you know, look a little bit better than Ronda. But was it necessary? I don't think so. And then, let's not talk about tarnishing the legacy of Beat the Clock Challenges. I just feel like tonight was a very, very startling example of how shallow their pool of tricks are when it comes to building towards significant matches. Tonight we saw yet again an underdog face insurmountable odds to achieve a match that they'll get at WrestleMania, something we've seen with Becky and Kofi already. Yet again we see a farewell tour that is way better than any match that may come up afterwards, which we'll get to later. And again, we see a promo that kind of falls flat on its face by making the person who cuts it look idiotic and saying, I have nothing more to say, and then literally dropping a mic only to pick it up and say one more thing and then do it again. I don't know, it was an insignificant start to an insignificant Raw. But at the very least, it set the stage for what was to come. So I guess that's good.
Okay, regards to Beat the Clock, you mentioned the fact that it's traditionally for something significant. The most common usage of Beat the Clock has been for the Elimination Chamber, actually, to determine who gets to enter the chamber last. Just a little factoid that I figured I'd offer. Andrew, you know who came out of this segment looking the worst? The Riot Squad.
Wait, they can look worse somehow?
Well, I mean, after this here, both two of them getting beaten in under a minute and a half.
I mean, yeah, because Ruby already got beaten less than a minute at, what pay-per-view was it? Not Fastlane.
Elimination Chamber.
Elimination Chamber, yeah, that's it. So, I don't know. Like, the Riot Squad's a fucking joke. Like, it'd be nice
if
they actually
put
some effort.
They're going to win next week, so everything will be fine.
Perhaps, if they're even on the show next week. You know.
Yeah,
they're
a six-woman tag.
Six-woman tag, where the people who hate each other will team up together begrudgingly against foes.
Oh, that's...
Yet another...
Yeah, that's a thing. Yet another in the very shallow pool of tricks that I was speaking about.
Can I just be sick next week?
Well,
you can.
If it makes you feel any better, Andrew, we're actually not going to talk about Raw next week. We kind of had this discussion last week. I'll remind everybody that next
episode
of the reaction. Just, I'll remind everybody real quick, though, that next week's episode of the reaction, we open with the final reaction for the go-home episode of Raw, and then we go into the Raw Reaction's fourth annual WrestleMania Prediction Spectacular.
Where I'm going to make three mic drops and then walk away.
And then keep talking.
Yeah,
I don't know
what to make of all this, Ben, because if that's the whole thing, then... fuck are we going to get? This stupid Beat the Clock challenge, all right, it was marginally more clever than what they usually do with the just rehashing and rehashing to some kind of, you know, no finish because nobody can look weak going into a match. I get that. This way we at least got pinfalls or something in two out of the three. So, all right, it's a thing, but we don't care about the Riot Squad. They're effectively jobbers at the moment. So we just watched the three main eventers beat the shit out of three jobbers in less than a minute and a half each. So, yay. And then now that whole fucking clusterfuck six-woman tag, like, who gives a shit? Like, nobody's going to eat a pin there. It's just going to get thrown out at some point when everybody starts infighting.
Andrew, remember when we did predictions for Elimination Chamber and I picked the Riot Squad to win the women's tag team titles? Man, I'm a fucking idiot.
Yeah, I wasn't going to bring that up, so you didn't have to throw yourself under the bus, bud.
It is what it is. Tony, one of the websites that we've discussed on this show before, TVTrope.com, seems kind of very familiar, almost a step-by-step reenactment of the pro wrestling page from TVTrope.com tonight, doesn't it? Because let's talk about that underdog.
Dumb shit.
Let's talk about that. Underdog beats the odds, but then loses to Daniel. Oh, wait, no, that was on SmackDown. Tonight, the underdog's name was Finn Balor, and he was supposed to take on Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush, but Leo Rush isn't medically cleared after getting trucked by Braun Strowman once again. Man, that's what happens when you put those cruiserweights up on the Big Show, huh, Vince? Anyway, so it ends up being Jinder Mahal in the match. Okay, Andrew, you have to give me this much. Jinder Mahal made this match worse than Leo Rush would have.
See, that's not saying much, because the whole thing just turned into a clusterfuck, because you had five people, four of which don't really matter in the storyline, just effectively distracting and taking up space. So, the whole match was awful. It didn't matter who it was.
On the plus side, after the match, Bobby Lashley got to play everybody's favorite game.
Fling the Sing!
Tony, your thoughts on the handicap match?
Who made this match? What person in the echelon of authority is so mad and upset with Finn that they have stacked the odds against him? I mean, he's not black,
Leo?
So it can't be that. Who created this unnecessary drama? That's a question that kind of I feel needs to be answered. Like, who just decided, yeah, you need to be in a handicap match in order to get your title shot? Even if, which I don't want to see Steph on TV, but even if we saw her, like, you know, get mad at Finn or just make some excuse as to why, because it just leaves this gaping hole as to why Finn had to prove himself after having done so already. Yeah, we could say they don't get rematches because they don't do that anymore, which also doesn't make much sense, but whatever. It's just one of those things where they had no idea how to get to the point they wanted to get to, so they reached into their bag and they said, oh, okay, underdog beats, you know, insurmountable odds to achieve a title match. So guess what happens? No one is invested. No one cares. You are now one of many matches on the card in which doesn't have an emotional weight. And I think that's what's really, really missing from a lot of the card this coming year. The ones that do have emotional weight seem forced. The ones that don't have players that we're not interested in, Corbin and Angle, and the ones appeal are the ones like Finn and Lashley, where, I mean, people just don't really care. We've seen them wrestle already. We've seen them face each other for the same title that they're going to wrestle for.
Well, I think the big selling point for the Finn and Lashley match is the fact that Finn was on the WrestleMania poster in the Demon attire, seemingly teasing the return of the Demon. Now, I get that that doesn't always appeal to everybody. I know we've talked about it on the show here, Tony. You're not a huge fan of the Demon because of the fact that he seems to pull it out at such random times. But there is a overall IWC appeal to the Demon character, and there's a general fan base interest in the Demon as well, because they definitely seem more invested in Finn when he has the Demon attire, the Demon entrance, than he does as the extraordinary man who does extraordinary things.
Not to be confused with the one and only. God, these things suck.
We are officially 12 minutes into the show, and I think Tony has a migraine. Way to go, WWE. Anyway, our next contest is Aleister Black and Ricochet taking on the tag team champions, The Revival. Hey, remember when Hawkins and Ryder were supposed to be in this match? Creative does it. Anyway, Aleister and Ricochet pick up a non-title victory after Aleister hits both members of the Revival with Black Mass. And I believe Dawson gets hit with Ricochet 630 for the pinfall. Probably setting up a tag team title match between these two, probably on the pre-show. Tony?
I mean, it's unfortunate how little I care. In terms of wrestling, these guys are usually pretty good, but there is just a lot of little minor missteps that I didn't expect from them. Very, very small, but it's because of who was involved, I was kind of like, oh, man, come on, guys. Let's slow it down just a bit because, we're not looking too good. And I touched on the reality of, like, being oversaturated by these guys a couple of weeks ago or maybe last week, wherein I gave the example of seeing them maybe once every few months and just being completely enamored with everything they do in the ring versus now where a simple backflip into a seated position by Aleister Black makes me roll my eyes. That's unfortunate.
Andrew, what were your thoughts?
That sadly it was probably the best match of the night. And it was still not very good. Like, the beginning before the commercial break was clunky, to put it nicely. Like, the backflip spot, I don't know if Aleister was too fast, the camera didn't change, but after he did that, Revival wasn't in position, so then You have Ricochet doing like a little Decky Fargo strut on the apron, waiting for then once like, a couple months or whatever, and he doesn't really wear on me, but the limited move set that WWE enforces, which basically turns him into flippy guy with no personality except he flips, that's fucking, I'm done. Like, this one-dimensional bullshit that WWE likes to paint their people as, I can't really tolerate. So if it is a match, I hope the Revival squash the shit out of him.
Yeah, I think that the best way to go here might be to just keep the belts on the Revival and let them put the first loss on Aleister and Ricochet so they can go their separate ways as singles competitors. I like both guys, but I don't care for them as a tag team. It does nothing for me when both of them are better suited for singles performances. Tony, I'm going to let you handle the Drew McIntyre segment because I was on the phone during it and unable to listen.
Well, we spoke last week with regards to Drew doing the whole, you know, I beg your family to talk you out of this match, you know, and it just, it comes off really, really awkward to me because tonight he continued on along the same lines of saying, you know, he hopes that Reigns' wife and extended family convince him to say no to the match. And it just, like, does this mean that if Reigns doesn't say no that the match is happening? Like, what is he trying to talk Reigns out of doing? I know the literal meaning is him being a smartass and saying, you know, I hope they talk you out of it because I'm going to kill you. Like, I get that. But when you dive too deep into the metaphor, it comes off as like, well, what if Reigns just ignores you? Like the match isn't made. Like, no one made this match. No one said this is happening. And that's evident by you literally saying, you haven't given me an answer. You haven't told me whether you wanted this match or not. So you gave one of our favorites on this show, Drew McIntyre, a program, which is fine with Roman Reigns. I find that intriguing. And you went the route that, I mean, it's just, so, again, so shallow in terms of excitement and depth of attempts to try and entertain. You went the, you know, cheesy heel route of attacking the family and wife and daughter. I mean, we just saw Samoa Joe do that. And we've seen Bray Wyatt do it to Reigns. Like, it's not new. It's not fresh. Drew is the only new thing here, and you made him old. And that's just kind of, yet again, I mean, you're rolling along Raw waiting for something great to happen, knowing that this is the penultimate Raw before WrestleMania, and you're just like, God, I really, really want to watch WrestleMania, but the only reason why I want to watch it is because I've been a fan since I was 4, and my life dictates that I have to watch WrestleMania. There's no excitement. There's no bug burrowing into my brain saying this show is amazing and you have to take work off to watch it. You know, like, where is that feeling at? I don't know. And I don't think it's because we're jaded, because we all want it to be good. You know, most fans who turn into that bitter, as Corey Graves called it, Cheeto eating, Mountain Dew drinking keyword warrior, they hate the show because they want to hate it. I want to like this so bad. And at this point in the show, which is roughly, I believe, like an hour in, you just left thinking, like, you guys are just going down the list of, you know, of fucking stereotypical bullshit. And we hit, you know, checklist number 4, where we hit the heel talking about the face's family to pull him into a match that he shouldn't even care about anyway. Why would Reigns care about this? Outside of, you know, Drew dismantling the Shield and shit. And again, we're talking about leukemia as the talking point. Like, leukemia didn't kill you, but I will. Okay, buddy.
That just strikes me as cheap heat and something that McIntyre has been above in his WWE run up to this point. Andrew, you've been by far the most vocal supporter of McIntyre on this show here. What did you make of the promo?
Oh, I can't save the segment this week because it's just... it very much repeated last week, and even though I understood where he was going with it last week, the fact that he led off this segment saying literally the same fucking thing and then just hitting the beat of basically I'm scarier than cancer and your family should keep you away from me kind of thing, like, okay, that's fine. And then Roman comes out. Roman was technically the thing that saved this segment. because the very, very simple response of Roman accepts, that said completely, like, mountains, paragraphs, however you want to paint the imagery of he led off his answer with Roman accepts. So he's drawing that line parallel to the way that Drew was drawing the line between, you know, Joe, you should tell your family to stop you from doing it. So I like the imagery there. There's decent writing in the dynamic. The words, not so much. But, you know, the dynamic imagery that the whole situation painted was good. But then the brawl and Drew kind of getting the best of Roman with a low blow was kind of along what Tony said, just shit that Drew was – he's kind of been above, because this whole gimmick when he came back was I work harder, I deserve it because – not because I'm here, but because I put in the time, or I earn it, that's why I deserve it kind of thing. And now he's just taken every shortcut possible since they kind of thrown him barren, so they're kind of ruining the mystique of the character he kind of built coming back. And I don't know. I don't really know. Like, this is hard to watch.
I will have you know that he earned his right to hit Roman in the ding-ding. Go ahead, Tony.
No, I just don't know. I don't know who's Joe and who's Roman. I don't know who's Dave and who's Batista. I don't know who's Ric Flair and Ric Fleur. This reality era has just gotten me all topsy-turvy. Harry, are you Harry, or did they just change your name to Broaders? Like, what's going on?
At least Drew is
much
Drew.
Much like Mustafa Ali, I too have lost my first name.
Great.
Oh, well, no.
Happens. Cutbacks, man. Apparently Harry Broadhurst won't fit on the T-shirt, but Broadhurst will. Drew backstage runs
like a lumber company or
Drew
something.
Drew backstage runs into Dean Ambrose. Ambrose challenges him to a match once again tonight, despite the fact that they said that he had the match with him last week. No, you fuckers, it was 2 weeks ago, but whatever. Clearly, I'm the only one paying attention. And tonight, he wants a last man standing match. A little bit later on, this match is confirmed. We'll discuss it in a bit. You know, Tony, I like to give you shit for your love for Sasha Banks on this show, but spoiler alert, this was actually my favorite match on the night until the bullshit ending with Tamina and Nia. Sasha and Natalya go to a no contest at about 7.5 minutes due to the interference of Tamina and Nia, but the match itself was actually perfectly competent, which is a step up for the women's division, especially on this show. What did you think of Sasha and Natty?
Well, you know, one can't deny the fact that both of these women can wrestle. However, one would be hard-pressed to find evidence to that notion due to the fact that they're not booked as people who can wrestle. You can look back at Sasha's NXT days and just really see that she's the type that can bring emotion into the match. Her promos suck, but her wrestling realistically is on point. And Natty's never been questioned as someone who can not wrestle, you know, or can wrestle. So the expectations are pretty much there. I'm really glad that they were able to put as much as they did in a small amount of time without even going into another gear. You know, we talk about someone like Ember Moon, who Andrew says is always like in fifth, and he's not wrong. This match, I believe, never really got off, and it still was really good. These two work well together, and just the little things, like Sasha bouncing off of the bottom rope to, I think it was another deep arm drag, instead of doing the corner spot, you know, the reversal of submissions. I don't know. It was just a good match. It was something very, very simple. How long did you say? Like 8 minutes or some shit? It just wasn't. It was
seven and a half.
Nicely wrapped. Yeah, 7.5 minutes. I mean, that's not a lot of time. And I think that they did a good job. With regards to, you know, Nia, I mean, realistically, you can't say anything new. So I'll just say, you know, there are certain people that should never wear leggings, and Nia Jax is one of them.
Andrew, your thoughts on Sasha and Natty, and then we'll discuss Beth laying out Tamina afterwards.
Yeah, it was mostly the bullshit finish that just kind of ruined this as not being my favorite match of the night, but it was, as you put, surprisingly competent. and there was nothing like really, really glaringly wrong with the match, but they continue this multi-team person schmoz bullshit of how this whole thing is going. So, yay. Now we're going to get a four-way, most likely, unless they want to add more fucking people to it. I don't know. But, yeah, I'm just over it. I mean, I guess it's something because they were supposed to establish Beth with this, that she fended off both of them and looked strong and that she's still the Glamazon. But I don't care. Like, whatever. I guess it kind of did what it was supposed to do, but I'm about as invested in this as I would be in a new Britney Spears album.
Tony, the reason I want to save the best thing for afterwards here is I personally disagree with giving away the Glam Slam here on the build-up to Raw. I think that that's something that you could have saved for Beth's WrestleMania moment, getting to hit the Glam Slam. What did you think of the fact that Beth got to stand tall on both Nia and Tamina after the match?
I mean, they did it to give people who had any doubt that, you know, she's worthy of the praise that she's getting. I don't know where this love for Beth came from. I'm not saying that I hate her. She was just a blip in the radar of a division that was floundering, you know? So her coming back doesn't really mean much to me. I mean, congrats, but, you know, I'm not biting onto it. So, you know, her hitting the Glam Slam didn't mean much to me, period. Other than it looked like Tamina might have fucking broken her shoulder because she doesn't know how to take a move properly. So, yeah, them doing it just doesn't, I don't care.
I popped for the Glam Slam, but I've been a Beth fan for the longest time, so I can't really judge anybody else's perspective of it. They officially announced that we're getting a second tag team into the Hall of Fame this year, Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart as the Hart Foundation. I almost feel like they would have been better off saving this and going with a situation where they do the Hart Foundation as a group, so that way you can kind of backdoor Owen into the Hall of Fame without catching too much static from Martha. What do you think of the Hart Foundation going in, Andrew?
It's a team. Yay. I think that makes Bret a two-time two now. Yay. We kind of expected it after Anvil died. So, like, that's is what it is. Like, the whole Hall of Fame in general is a giant participation award just for fucking being in the WWE. There is no criteria. I don't give a fuck. Like, anybody and everybody is eligible to go into it, so hooray, man. Next question.
Tony, anything to add?
Yeah, I'm going to be up for the Warrior Award soon for putting up with their bullshit all these years.
or you're the new Mega-Wish.
The good news about that is, Tony, that would be somebody actually getting the Warrior Award who deserves it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, you know, sure, why not? Again, I mean, I'll reiterate what Andrew said. There's not much to the Hall of Fame, you know, inductions. It's cool. Seems a little front-loaded this year, but that could just be us, you know, getting older. because, you know, a few years ago, there weren't that many people that were, like, all gung-ho about. I don't know. You know, seeing Natty cry didn't do much for me. I see it too much. I'm not really interested in any more of her tears. I hope she gets a new pair of sunglasses, you know. Because who is she without sunglasses?
They're not the same because they're not dad's sunglasses. New ones from Sunglass Hut won't do it, man.
I actually think they come from Sunglasses R Us.
Oh, that works too. I guess it is better just to get the online shipping. Maybe it's a warehouse deal. Or like a wholesale thing. Ooh, maybe.
No, it's one of those ads for Ray-Ban where you can get them for 90% off.
Okay, he popped me with that one. Kurt Angle backstage discusses his match later with Samoa Joe. Angle puts over his and Joe's history and says that he wants to leave on his own terms with true tests like Joe, almost taking a backhanded shot at the fact that Creative gave him Baron Corbin on his way out the door. Corbin arrives and runs down Angle as being old and busted, so that means when Kurt Angle beats his ass at WrestleMania, which is probably going to happen, what does that do for Corbin? Let's go ahead and skip forward to, we'll come back to the Moment of Bliss here in a few moments, but let's skip forward to these two matches that kind of tie into this segment. First, Baron Corbin faces Apollo Crews, which we literally just saw last week. This time, Corbin picks up the win with End of Days and then hits a second End of Days after the match just to be a dick. The fans, despite being in Angle's home or in Corbin's hometown, give Corbin nothing. There's no cheering. There's no booing. There is silence. A little bit later on, Kurt Angle takes on Samoa Joe. Angle picks up the win via roll-up out of the Coquina Clutch, which I guess I'm okay with, even though you're having one of your champions drop a non-title match again. Another sad trope that happens in this company far too often. But, I mean, at least Joe carried the match to something watchable because, man, it's getting tough to watch Kurt in the ring these days. Tony, your thoughts on both Corbin and Angle's matches as we head forward to their match at WrestleMania?
So last week, very, very upset about Corbin. And I responded, you know, with that same energy that you all know and love. Afterwards, I got to thinking, maybe the WWE truly is doing a troll job. And our fellow colleague, Greg DeMarco, would have us believe that the WWE, and I can put money on a future column after WrestleMania saying that Greg knew the WWE planned this months ago and that we were all stupid for believing that it was true. And that being that Corbin will get shortchanged at Mania and John Cena will show up or something to the effect where it will make us feel better for this bullshit, right? And I thought to myself, wow, this, because usually us three can see it and we'll telegraph it. We'll be like, we know what they're doing, but why? This one caught me off guard because it made me so angry. And I responded immediately. After taking it into consideration, I realized that maybe the WWE is going to give us one of those WrestleMania moments where, you know, Corbin loses really, really quickly, and then John Cena shows up and we get a Ruthless Aggression, you know, recap. And if that happens, it would be a great moment. But once I hit that point of realization, I then asked myself, why? And this is something that I could write an entire column about, but I'm not going to. But about the WWE prolonging this idea of delayed gratification and stretching it to the point where we are no longer satisfied when the result eventually comes. We know Kofi Kingston is going to face Daniel Bryan for the title. We know Becky Lynch was eventually going to get into the main event. We know / hope that Kurt Angle's last match is not going to be against Baron Corbin. But how much can we put up with until we just say, I don't want to see it anymore? And that's a question that I don't have an answer to, but tonight was an example of that, where Kurt is facing all of these people in somewhat, you know, dream matches, and it'll all result in him facing Baron Corbin. And one could say, and Greg DeMarco would say, that he's a true heel, even though months ago there was no such thing as a heel. And he would say that, you know, this was the plan all along. And, I mean, I love Greg for doing that because he creates a soundboard in which we could bounce off of, you know, and he does represent a particular section of the internet, the complainers who complain about the complainers, if you will. But realistically, it makes me question, like how high of a tolerance do we have as fans to be okay with this? And is it me, or has this year been that specific idea and mentality the entire time for almost everyone? Like Finn, Kofi, even Brian before he won the title. The idea, just everyone. Like, it doesn't, how much, Seth, we could list examples all night. How much is too much in this idea of delayed gratification? And why are we exhausted instead of yearning? You know what I mean? And I just don't know the answer to it. I just know that I'm not pumped about Angle versus Corbin, even if it is 1 minute and then Cena shows up. I don't want that. Is that just me being biased and personal, or is that just looking at the story played out to me and realizing I don't like this writing?
Andrew, your thoughts on both the matches as well as the way we continue to build towards Corbin and Angle at Mania?
All right, let me hit the matches first before I go into, you know, the diatribe like Tony did. Corbin and Cruz, no one cares. Yay, Corbin got his win back, 50-50 booking. No one actually gives a fuck. Angle and Samoa Joe, though. I'll admit, it's very simple. The way the match started off popped the shit out of me because the stare down and Joe headbutting Angle was reminiscent of the way Angle debuted in TNA when he walked up to Joe and headbutted Joe. And it's just, it was nice way to kind of bring a callback in there, like immediately since they were referencing their past. So I liked it a little more probably just because I was popped from the onset and, you know, the match was all right. It wasn't a classic. It wasn't a barn burner, but it was solid for what it was, and there was a couple nice moments in there because there's familiarity and respect regardless of the fact that Joe plays a heel. So I liked it. It was fine. As for the whole WrestleMania moment, I said last week that it was going to be a Vince Russo swerve. I'm pretty sure most of us that weren't just blinded by rage saw that this was a setup. And you're not supposed to be excited for it. You're supposed to hate Corbin. Corbin's taking the hate and he's using it to his advantage in a sense. Now, yes, he's getting go-away heat, and if you even want to use that terminology, or he's getting apathy at times, but you know that it's so obvious with the way they keep hitting the beats so hard. Last week, I said the same thing where him hitting the beat of, I'm going to retire Kurt Angle. I'm the guy. And then, oh, we're going to need a bigger boat or whatever the fuck he said on Twitter about, like, you know, swimming in smart tears or some shit like that. Like, and now he gets introduced as all of his former accolades, former Money in the Bank, former Golden Gloves, former U.S. champion, former this, that, the other thing. He's trying to just soak in the hate. He's trying to be a heel, which is why even Greg can't deny his attempt at being a heel. And since we're bringing Greg into the conversation, he's right regardless of what he says, because there's one thing we all agree on, and that is there are no heels and faces unless WWE wants it to be. There is no anything unless WWE is playing off of it. So everything is at WWE's discretion. There is no, you know, immediate rematch clause because they want it to not be, but if they did want it to come back, they would. It's not in many other companies that it's a set in stone, there's a rematch clause, but it always was for WWE, so people have grown accustomed to it. So that they take it away, and now people are bitching about that. You know, Brock is not on TV with the Universal title. That's exactly how things were back in the 80s and the 70s when you only saw the champion once for a big match. And that was what was accepted. But because you're always getting it defended on TV for the last 15, 20 years, it's an established, you know, it's an established thing that people are just used to. And you go back to something older or you buck the trend a little bit and people bitch. People are going to bitch regardless. And it's the beauty of taking that and working with it. Because I think we all know, since it's kind of falling into our wheelhouse of doing the whole review critique thing, negativity gets a lot more traction than positivity. And there's people that hate watch things, much like you brought up earlier, Tony, that, you know, some people who are the Mountain Dew Cheeto eating people want to hate it. So that's why they watch it, just to pick it apart and hate it. And, you know, there is no bad publicity. I'm pretty sure we've all heard that one before. So who cares? WWE is coming off some of their best years financially. And yes, it's getting a little repetitive. They don't have another storyline aside from underdog face eventually goes somewhere, does a thing, boom, hooray, congrats for him. But whatever. Mania is not something they're selling based off the matches. Has Mania really ever been a you're going there for the match or you're going there for Mania. Like, in the grand scheme of things, Mania is a destination thing. It's not a golly gee whiz, this championship match is the reason why I'm spending $3,000 on a plane ticket and front row seats. And no, sorry, $3,000 won't cover a front row seat. But you know what I mean. Exorbitant amounts of money on the destination. Why? Because it's Mania. Not because it's Roman versus Lesnar or, you know, the first all-women's main event. No! It's because it's Mania. So who cares?
Tony, I feel like you would have been upset about that Mountain Dew remark because you resemble it.
Well, I mean, you could only get upset about remarks like that when you actually fit the mold. I drink an absorbent amount of Mountain Dew, but I'm also very active. I have a 4-pack, so...
But yeah. How many Cheetos do you eat?
I'm not a big
I was
Cheeto
just
guy.
About to ask that. See, I'm with him on that. I'm not a huge Cheeto person either. I'm more of a Frito than a Cheeto.
I don't really eat
I'm more tortilla chips than I am, you know, Cheetos. But, you know,
so
we voted in a Cheeto, so what are we going to do?
So would that make you Tostitos, not Cheetos?
See.
I'm proud of myself. That was a nice little reference. Anyway, back to the
that
show.
That wasn't bad. I'll give you points there.
Rewinding to a moment of bliss, Alexa brings out Braun Strowman, and then on the screen, possibly pre-recorded, possibly not, I'm not sure, regardless, it's Colin Jost and Michael Che. Instead of wearing a Mets hat like he did in Philadelphia tonight, since we're in Boston, Jost wears a Yankees hat. But remember, he's not a heel unless the WWE wants him to be, right, Greg? Anywho, eventually... Braun convinces Jost and Che to talk themselves into the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, and holy shit, these sumbitches are going to eliminate Braun, aren't they? Oh, boy. I wonder if Corbin has that boat from the River of Smart Tears that he can give to Strowman. What did you think of A Moment of Bliss, Andrew?
Really? No, that was fucking terrible. The acting was awful. The beats were so fucking obvious and overdone and stupid shit. Braun can't dialogue like cleverly at all. Nothing comes off witty. You know, Alexa was at least a little adorable when she's just like, what, you expect me to just throw them to the wolves? And she's like, fuck it, I'll do it. It's funny. I'm an evil little bitch. Or, you know, however the fuck she put it. Like, that worked for her character. But the rest of it was awful. Jost or whatever, Che, Joe, I don't know. Like, I can't understand why you say they're funny at some point. Because at no point in what we've seen in WWE have they been anything close to competent as actors, much less as comedians. It is some of the hardest to watch. Data from fucking Star Trek is more animated and less staccato and robotic than those morons. And it's like, and he's supposed to be a fucking robot. So come on, give me a break. Like, that was painful. I'd rather go slip my wrist and play in traffic than watch anything with them again.
The views and opinions of Andrew Balazs do not necessarily reflect those of the Chairshot Radio Network.
But
okay,
in this
so my
particular
thought process,
situation, they do.
Jesus. Real quick, before Tony gives his answer here, the reason I say about Jost and Che is they actually are funny on Saturday Night Live, but I think that's because they're not forcing it on Saturday Night Live. I think they're intentionally overacting here, and it's making it come off as terrible as it is. Tony, what are your thoughts on the segment?
What's the name title of the show tonight? What is it, Monday Night Raw?
I believe
right.
So.
So it's not Saturday Night Live, right? So I don't give a fuck if they're Oscar-worthy on that show. They suck tonight. That's all that I care about because that's what I'm watching. I found it deplorable, unnecessary. The whole thing is just incredibly forced. From him being a heel that's not afraid of Braun, which I don't. I mean, why would you not be afraid of Braun? Maybe because of the way he talks. I don't know. It's just, I mean, I can't get mad because it's the Andre the Giant Battle Royal festivity circus of them all. So that match doesn't mean anything anywhere. So it's not like I'm getting mad that my beautiful wrestling is being tainted by, you know, subpar actors from from SNL. That's not even like that. It's just not entertaining. You know, I will never go the route of the majority of the IWC blindly. And I'm not going to say that they don't belong on the show. They don't belong on WrestleMania. That's what WrestleMania is. It's a spectacle that brings in a vast majority of different entertainers to, you know, all be under one roof. So it's not even that. It's just the routes that they take to every single storyline that's leading to WrestleMania just makes you roll your eyes a little bit. And this was another one in a long line of decisions throughout the night where it's just like, ugh. I mean, the dude went for the cheap heel heat, which is fine, except for the fact that he's not a wrestler. Like, what is his motivation? And that sounds so, like, acting 101. But, like, realistically, what is his motivation? To upset the biggest guy in the locker room? To piss off a crowd of fans that he doesn't like? Is he not a wrestling fan? Is he anti-wrestling? Because I think that would be a great angle. I think that would be annoying and upsetting to fans that this man who does not like wrestling is in a battle royal. Like, that's upsetting. But that's not what's explained. That's not even, like, it's hinted towards maybe, but it's not, like, given the push that would be necessary for us to hate him. It's just apathy. I mean, you heard the boos. You heard, you know, what the crowd wasn't really all that entertained in anybody involved other than Alexa, you know, Bliss's spiky shirt. So, I mean, yeah, you said Data was more entertaining. Yeah, the Data from the Goonies was also more entertaining. I mean, it just wasn't wasn't fun.
No time for love.
I don't know.
The jump.
Yeah, $50 bill. And also, it was not nearly as present as it has been in the past. But any time a segment goes down and commentary is laughing about it, automatically removes me from it completely. It makes me feel like, I don't know, and this could just be me specifically, but I don't want them in my bubble at that particular moment. I don't want the stickers. I don't want the muffled laughter. I don't know. It comes off so weird to me, and I don't like it, and it happened tonight, and I wanted to kick my television, but I knew that Cole wouldn't see or feel it, so I stopped.
That's the next smart TV evolution, that if a show pisses you off that badly, you can physically reach through the television and slap the person that's pissing you off.
Dude, Cole would be die. First in line to buy that at midnight at Best Buy or wherever fuck it is. I'd be like, I will take two.
So that way you can reach in with both hands to slap him?
Damn right. Maybe even joke him.
I am not. That'll get you fired. Ask Brian Daniels anyway.
And then I get rehired. It's okay.
And multiple-time heavyweight champion, once you do. All's well that ends well, I suppose. Anywho, continuing on.
That seems like a good thing now.
You guys, can Seth we talk Rollins about the heavy loss in the wrestling world today? Did everyone hear of the huge, huge loss that we have befallen?
Is it the Mustafa
No.
Christ.
How will I ever live with the knowledge that these women will never step foot in a ring to wrestle again?
Okay, that assumes that they actually wrestled when they were in the ring before.
Yeah, I am so torn up. I'm sad. I'm crying right now. Can you tell?
Look, I'm not going to argue against somebody saying they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame because we just talked about the Hall of Fame not meaning anything. But for anyone to say that these girls were pioneers for anything other than their entertainment connections, which I don't know how they got. But no, I do, because this world is ran by reality TV shows. And they, if you were to ever watch Total Divas, it is like Kardashian light. Man, just from the way that they talk to their vapid, you know, responses to what they actually care about, it is a chore to watch. And it's more so a chore knowing that these people exist 10 minutes away from me, like all the time, everywhere. I've served them. You know,
I was about to say, doesn't vapid basically describe 80% of California?
85, I'd say.
I rounded down. I'm sorry. My math was a little off, bud.
I will argue vehemently against anybody that says that they deserve any type of accolades outside they made divas, which now are defunct, mainstream. You know, they mean nothing. Like the idea that without Nikki, Ronda wouldn't be where she is. What? Ronda could have gotten signed and faced anybody. Like, Nikki did nothing. What?
Okay, now that is a stupid comment about the whole Ronda thing. But to play devil's advocate, they were the most visible. They did kind of break through to other media forms, and they were always at, like, Nickelodeon Kids Choice Awards and MTV stuff, and they had that crossover appeal that no one else did. Like, you know, as much as we love Trish, was Trish like a staple on MTV and Nickelodeon? Like, did she have her own reality? Like, okay, reality TV wasn't a big thing back in the early 2000s, even though it was a thing. But you know what I'm getting at. Like, Lita didn't have the crossover. Trish didn't have the crossover.
I would argue that if the reality thing that we have nowadays was a thing back then, that Trish and Lita would have been even bigger stars because of it than Nikki and Brie came out of it with. Their personalities are much more.
Yeah, I don't like arguing with if, but we would have found out Lita was a whore a lot earlier, and that would have ruined the whole Edge thing. I was very specific with my applauding the Bellas, where I was very specific, and they very much did tie entertainment in with wrestling, and they also moved the idea of a diva into a different world. I will give them that. However, it was such a small amount of time, and ultimately, did they leave the division better when they left? No, it was shitty. It had to be restarted completely. They did nothing other than break a record that was only broken because they didn't want someone that no longer worked there, who was married to someone that pissed them off and tried to sue them, holding it. Like, it was like I cannot recall a match in which either one of them didn't do wrong. Remember, we talked about it every week, Harry. Like, they were not good, and I refuse to look back on their career and say, man, they did so much to help and pioneer the women's movement. No, we had to start all over.
It's a matter of looking at it. Yes, they weren't competent in the ring, or yes, it took them 10 years to get serviceable almost, however you want to really word that. But in the same respect, the women's wrestling movement in WWE has seen the biggest boom it has in the last year or two for when it comes to appeal, positioning on the card, and perceived competence. And the Bellas were kind of reintroduced as the OG divas that kind of put it into that. So it's all revisionist history. It's all history is written by the victor type kind of mentality. But there's an argument that can be made. I don't agree with it necessarily, but I can see why people will give them maybe a little more credit than is deserved, because if you look at what you just said with if they left the division better when they left, you know, and, you know, went to greener pastures, whatever the hell it is, they did, because now it's main eventing WrestleMania. They had their first all-women's pay-per-view, and a Bella, you know, main evented that. So in the trajectory that WWE is forcing the narrative, yes, the Bellas helped to pave a way. Yes, the division is healthier now, you know, after they left and after they helped establish, set up the foundation, however you want to look at it. And that's the story that they're going to go with. No one cares about ring work.
Talent is not sexually transmitted, okay? So
thanks, AJ.
Aw, Puddin.
He sets him up, knocks him down. Anywho, I was actually looking for a clip of Fuels Leave the Memories Alone, but apparently we don't have one in our sound bank, and that greatly disappoints me. That said, the other thing that I guess the Bella Twins can lay claim to is that Nikki's responsible for Charlotte's first title win back at Night of Champions in 2015.
There we go.
Well, responsible is a strong word. She was the victim of Charlotte's first title win, I should say. Regardless, Seth Rollins' promo getting back to tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw as he talks about basically everything that everybody else that's faced Brock has ever said. Man, this really was Groundhog's Day for Raw, wasn't it?
Yes.
Paul Heyman comes out and says the next thing that we know that Seth Rollins is going to ask for everybody's thoughts and prayers, which I'll admit made me chuckle. Rollins chases Heyman up the ramp because that's what a good babyface does, and then says that he's not coming for his thoughts and for everybody's thoughts and prayers, that he's the answer to them, and that he's going to go to the gates of Suplex City and lets the crowd finish his catchphrase for him. I mean, ultimately, I'm interested in the match. We've only seen it as a singles match once before, Battleground 2015. I actually did some research for this to find that out, that date specifically. And the match itself was dominated completely by Brock. But I think with the way that they're kind of teasing Seth as a superface now, he's definitely going to have much more going his way throughout the course of that match than he did for the Battleground match here. Tony, what is your interest level in Seth and Brock? Scale of 1 to 10.
Wrestling-wise, I'm interested. I'm really interested. Storyline-wise, it's been kind of basic, but, you know, I'm not saying there's not much you can do. I'm simply saying there's not much that I think they expected to do with this particular match anyways. And we could see that by them not really stretching the means of, you know, creativity. We're not getting anything, out of the ordinary. We're not getting anything new. So, I don't know. Like, this is one of those things where you're interested to see who's going to win. I think the match as a wrestling match will be very good. And I think that's kind of it.
Andrew, you've been Seth's biggest detractor on this show. Where did you think about his promo tonight? And where's your expectations for the Rollins-Lesnar match at WrestleMania?
I think his promo proves one funny thing about his entire character as a main event, quote-unquote, talent. He can never do it by himself. He went through a litany of names to, you know, reference. He constantly used Roman Reigns' leukemia battle as crowd or help get people behind him or, you know, help motivate him through. And then, you know, even when it came to the Intercontinental title, when he had issues with Dolph, he still needed Dean to help him. Then when he turned heel, Triple H, J&J Security, Corporate Kane, he can't do jack shit by himself, really, when it comes down to it. He cashed in a Money in the Bank in to make it a three-way match, which means he still can't do it by himself because there was a third person involved, and he pinned the third person that wasn't Brock. So, like, it's ironic how he kind of gets touted as the person that should be the face, but there's really no reason to hang your head on or hang your hat on anything he's done accolade-wise because it's always kind of with help or he needs to make a reference or inspire people by using multitudes of names that he knows are going to get a pop anyway because he's fucking color by numbers babyface. And just whatever. As when it comes to the match, yeah, I have no interest in it. Like, will it probably be an okay match? Sure. But I don't want to see it. Like, it's going to be on the card, so I'll have to see it. Hopefully Lesnar wins. But, yeah, fuck this. Like, I can't stand Seth in the least bit. Aside from just the fact that his wrestling is so 1-2-3 choreographed like a waltz, and occasionally he'll put in a wrinkle, but it's still all the same beats. And, like, you know, the name – what is it? The names change, but the song stays the same kind of thing. That's what Seth Rollins' matches are for every single solitary one. But I just – after he cut his promo, I sat here and went, he can't actually do anything by himself. It's actually funny.
I believe it's the lyrics change, but the song remains the same. But your point is well taken. I like Rollins. I don't especially care for Brock. I do think that I would prefer to see the title on the show on a weekly basis. I get that Lesnar is a draw, and I will say that in that regard, he does work from a television ratings perspective. Episodes of Raw that Brock is advertised for are traditionally anywhere from a half a point or more higher than episodes that he's not advertised for. That being said, at what point do you have to cut your losses with Brock, with him making as much as he is per appearance, and go with the talent that you have there on a 365 basis? We move on. The Triple H promo. Okay, so this is supposed to be a blood feud where it's no holds barred, and they gave him what he wanted, and now Triple H's in-ring career is on there. Then why is Triple H treating this like such a goddamn joke, Andrew?
Because he's Triple H, and that's really the only way he knows how to cut a promo anymore?
God, this promo irritated the fuck out of me. Like, I can get over the Triple H Batista promo from a couple of weeks ago because Batista was driven to get what he wanted, no pun intended. There was a genuine passion in the way that they were having the argument that they had there. This was just shenanigans for the sake of shenanigans from Triple H. The comment about doing the job to the envelope. The Spice Girls reference. Like, really? In 2019, Big Bad Triple H is making a fucking Spice Girls reference? Go ahead and give me your thoughts on the segment, Andrew.
I mean, after Batista did his whole thing, Matthew made an entire gif out of it, or someone did, and that was in Botchamania. The whole Spice Girls reference with the gimme what I want, what I really, really want thing, so I don't know if he was just trying to kind of build off the fact that he assumes that most of the smart marks would get the reference if it was referencing to Matthew, or if he just thought the Spice Girl thing was cute, which that wasn't the problem, really, the little Spice Girls reference. It's just, again, as we've hit multiple times on this show, nothing new was added. Oh, wow, he's going to put his career on the line now. Whoop-de-fucking-do. Does it change the match? No. Did anybody really gasp or care? No, because it's Triple H. It doesn't matter.
Do any of us think Batista has a snowball's chance in hell of winning? No. Tony?
No, and that's where another one of the issues comes up, because although one could assume that Triple H is not going to lose to Batista because Batista is going to go out and make millions being Drax, there is always that possibility of it. And then you throw this unnecessary fold into it, and you're like, oh, well, thanks for giving away the result of the match. Obviously, Triple H isn't going to lose because he's still got, you know, two matches a year that we have to clamor and claw for. His joking during the promos was bothersome to me because it's not that he used insider terms. It was simply that he thought we're friends. Like, he thought I was his buddy. And I'm not your buddy. You're here to entertain me. This is it. Don't pretend that you know where I'm at. Don't pretend that you're one of us, if you will, by saying you didn't want a job to the envelope and that, you know, we remember when he was the deacon and then dropping the Spice Girls thing. It's not, or even saying, like, you know, the tech giving him a dry mic. Why would he give you a wet one if the dude cut the promo 2 weeks ago? That doesn't even make sense. That's not funny because it doesn't make sense. I get it. I totally get it. I mean, it's one of those hairy jokes. It's not funny. But it just, you know, he's talking about how the letter rambled and rambled for pages and pages. And then you look in his hand, he's holding two sheets of paper. Like, just that's the kind of bullshit that especially Triple H should not be doing. That's amateur hour. That's me watching a high school play. Come on. You're better than this, I would assume. There was adding the levity to it and just kind of making Dave, because he's Dave, you know, just a little bit more of a joke, adding to the reality that he's just said, you know, give me what I want over and over again. It's like, do you want us to take this seriously as a blood feud with no holds barred? Or do you want us to laugh along with you in this, you know, joke of a match? I don't know what you want me to do, Paul. I don't know what you want me to do.
You know, before Harry continues on, I'll make this argument here, and it's definitely a tentative devil's advocate type thing, because I think I see where this is going, because I could see it if it was literally any other company who you kind of have faith that the storyline is going to play through the match, which we don't with WWE. And I think conceptually it's supposed to be Batista had to beat up Flair to get Triple H's attention because he didn't take it seriously. He shrugged it off during SmackDown 1000, the whole you've never beat me, and he just kind of laughed it off. So the fact that he jokes about it and adds levity and kind of just like dismisses Batista as he quit twice because he couldn't hack it, he couldn't beat Cena, he's washed up, there's no animal left, he's a piece of shit, you know, whatever, fine, I'll throw my career on the line too because I'm better than him and he can't go. If the match plays into that, if we see Triple H kind of fuck with Batista in the beginning and kind of big brother him, condescend in the match, and then Batista kind of taps back into the old animal and we get a tough brawl where then the light kind of, you know, the light bulb goes off for Triple H, oh fuck, I need to try or I'm going to lose my career, then I think it pays off this build. The build seems awkward because it's WWE, not because it's a bad build. We have no faith in the payoff. I'm pretty sure I can speak for all of us on that fact that we've seen so many possible decent storylines go to shit with bad matches, stupid gimmicked endings, just bad finishes, the wrong finish, and it's just made us lose faith in the fact that the match won't tell the story, so we judge the story before the match happens.
Two things to that. One, I think you're giving the writing staff entirely too much credit.
Which is condescending to say that.
How do you mean?
Condescending in the fact that we have seen them put together decent storylines in the past, and just because we don't like the stories they've done recently, or maybe recently hasn't been their best work, we don't think they can throw together another one. Like, you know, the whole Daniel Bryan thing, the IWC still claims credit for that, even though there's been enough information out there to tell you that that was kind of the plan. So that's good writing. You know, the CM Punk pipe bomb was still more or less on par with the way they were shooting the angle. So it came off as a good thing for business. So you can't just dismiss them as always being trash.
Okay, but at the same time, the payoff to the CM Punk pipe bomb angle was Triple H taking on Kevin Nash in a sledgehammer on the ladder match.
Which plays into exactly what I said, is that we're just jaded because the matches have not necessarily paid off. But it doesn't mean the story build isn't logical or there if the match were to follow through.
And I said just a few weeks ago how it was kind of annoying that one of the better written matches was the one with Triple H involved. So if in the event this does happen at WrestleMania, then kudos to them because that's funny and it also works. You know, I won't be so bold as to say that, you know, Harry's right and they're not capable of doing that. I mean, my argument has always been that they are always capable of it and they've shown us glimpses of it. They just, you know, whether it be laziness or Vince McMahon, they've just been unable to ride the wave of momentum anytime they pick some up.
If that ends up being the way that it plays out, Andrew, I will give you complete credit on the Raw after WrestleMania. I will say that you saw this coming before I did. I will give you the credit that you get for calling it right here. Fair enough?
Sure.
Okay. Tony, I know you're pro Pornhub, but those guys at Brazzers are apparently trying to win you over.
Well, Brazzers, you have to pay for a membership, and I'm not really sure I'm down for that.
technically speaking, you can get browsers content on Pornhub Premium.
Yeah, you have to pay for that too.
This is true. In a world with this much free porn, I'm not sure that ever paying for it is a good idea. But you posted the thing in the Raw report, which where can people find that?
411mania.com.
/wrestling. Of the WWE breaking news, WrestleMania 35 will feature the first ever women's main event when Ronda Rousey, Becky Lynch, and Charlotte battle for the Raw Women's Championship. Brazzers, congratulations. You guys figured out what we learned 15 years ago. Build around the ladies and the fellas will come.
So
like the only thing I was about to say, I feel like the only way to have really driven that point home would have been to use the alternative spelling of the word.
I don't think you need to drive it home. There's a difference between the implied and just beating the joke over the head. You say it the same way.
you don't need to drill it in that hard.
No need to rush the finish. Gotcha.
Just let it ride.
How are they riding exactly? Regular or reverse? Never mind. Main event time. Last man standing. Drew McIntyre takes on Dean Ambrose. Once again, McIntyre stands tall to win the match at the end of the episode of Raw, defeating Ambrose, who is leaving, isn't leaving. Who the fuck knows at this point? But anyway, McIntyre gets the win in Last Man Standing with a Claymore kick to finally put Dean down after a kendo stick, a table, well, not a whole lot else. Tony, what did you think of this match? I actually thought this was significantly downgraded from their False Count Anywhere match 2 weeks ago.
You know, good that Dean is over there giving Drew the rub. So, yeah, it's one of those things where people would complain if he wasn't doing this. You know, like the whole old adage of wrestlers leaving on their back. I think that if Dean Ambrose is leaving, he wants to do that, and he chose Drew McIntyre to do it for. So, I don't know. It's cool. You know, it's we're focused more on the matches that are going to happen at Mania. And if Dean wants to help Drew on the way, then it's that type of old school booking that you kind of, in my opinion, kind of have to look at and be like, oh, that's cool. I don't know. It's just one of those things where, I mean, all three of us like the old school wrestling mentality where the story's in the ring and, you know, the traditions are still held intact for the most part. And I think this is just more along the lines of that, where although it may not be like, heavy on the storyline, it's more from my point of view, Dean just saying, hey, you got a match with Roman Reigns coming up. You got to look strong because it's Roman Reigns. How about you win over me a couple of times in some hard-hitting, badass matches? And if we know Dean Ambrose and who he used to be before WWE, he loves this shit. Like, he likes chainsaws to the forehead. So a Last Man Standing match and a False Count Anywhere match is like, that's his, like, hell yeah, if I'm going out, I'm going out with bruises.
Andrew?
I mean, the match was significantly downgraded because there was no heat, no desire for this. The crowd didn't care. The spots were lame. Like, I'm sure that I wasn't the only one that saw Dean pull himself under the apron skirt to take the weird lift into the bottom. So, like what the fuck? Like, it was sloppy. I don't know if it was just bad camera work, not a lot of weapons. Granted, I'll give him a small bit of credit that Dean brought out a table before the inevitable chant started, and that was like the only thing the crowd popped for in the entire show, because they brought out the table before they had to chant, we want tables, because that's apparently all crowds ever want. Like, there is no other weapon ever made, ever, except the table, and that's what they want to see. So, hey, they got what they wanted. Good for them. But, yeah, the match was lame. It was fine in a sense, but it was still lame. And if it is Dean leaving and just wanting to put over Drew, you would think that maybe there'd be some weight behind the wins. Like, Drew has just dominated the shit out of Dean every match they've had. So at this point, what is the help? What's the rub? I don't think there is anything left to rub.
And we're back to Bradford again.
I figured it was a nice tie back. There we go.
On that note, that brings us to the end of this episode of Monday Night Raw. Favorite match or moment, Tony?
Way to come full circle, jerk. Sasha Banks, because she looked cute tonight. Her wig was on right. I'm telling you, she needs a black friend, man.
God damn it. Andrew, favorite match or moment?
Technically, the ending, but I guess I can't pick that because I don't mean the last match. I just mean the fact that it ended. I guess I'll just go with what I thought was marginally the best match in a land of mediocrity today, and that was the Revival versus Aleister and Ricochet. Sure. That.
I'm going with the Sasha and Natty match just because it was the one that I felt was the most entertaining throughout the course of the show, given my expectations for it. I thought that the Aleister Ricochet Revival match underwhelmed. I thought Dean and Drew underwhelmed. And I thought that Samoa Joe was basically carrying Kurt Angle to a watchable match at this point in Kurt's career, which is kind of sad to watch as a longtime Kurt Angle fan. Greg Watry, Tony.
What upset me the most? I'm going to go with... the whole SNL people segment. What was his headline? Former Olympic gold medalist disgraces himself and his last match is unceremoniously tarnished by Baron. That's not a headline, stupid. No newspaper in their right mind would ever allow that to be a headline. God.
It's the little things that piss Tony off sometimes. I'm going to go with the Elias segments. I thought they were dumb. Especially that
They're
last
so dumb,
one where
we didn't
he
even
gets
talk
robbed.
About them.
Yeah, the last one especially was awful. And yeah, we just overlooked it completely because they did suck. Like, I'm so sick of what they've been doing with them.
No, I get it. It's not funny, but I get it.
But I get it. Love it.
I like how he tied in an inside joke there as well. Well played, Andrew.
I did,
all
yes.
Right. Scale of 1 to 10, Tony.
I'm going to go with a 5.
Andrew?
Yep.
In honor of Bret Hart getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, I'm going to go with a 4 out of 10.
I'm going to land with Tony at a 5. Watchable, and what wasn't watchable was kept to a minimum, i.e. Nia and Tamina showing up in general existence. The only thing that really outright annoyed me that was extended was the SNL Braun Strowman segment, but that at least had Alexa to look at. So yeah, I'm going to go with a 5 as well. Who's your MVP tonight, Tony?
Oh, I'm going to give it to myself again, going through this. I'm giving it to Sasha. She's the easy answer.
Andrew?
You wish she was easy, Tony. But anyway,
there's a joke there.
She is married, sir.
So when is
that? Yeah,
that
doesn't mean much. Yeah, that doesn't mean much.
This is America. There's like a 60% divorce rate. So. And that's just people that don't get caught or do get caught.
And I play the slow game. She'll come around eventually.
She might. That's a good point. As for my MVP, I'm going to go with Samoa Joe purely because of the headbutt open.
Son of a bitch.
Back at me.
My MVP for tonight was Samoa Joe as well. Just the fact that he was able to help get Kurt through that match. Is it just me or did like Kurt look extra blown up tonight?
Oh, he looked extra bad. Like, yeah.
It's getting really hard to watch, and I'm glad that the end is near for Kurt because I want to remember the Kurt Angle back in 2000, 2001, 2002 that was just popping bitches with suplexes, not the Kurt Angle in 2019 that can barely move around the ring without getting gassed. That's going to wrap us up for this episode of Raw. We'll be back next Monday night, although we will be on a much different format as we talked about here. 10 matches are currently official for WrestleMania. We still have SmackDown to go next week and then the following week's Raw before we come back at you once again. But I'm sure there'll be more than that for us to discuss as it is the fourth annual Raw Reaction Prediction Spectacular for WrestleMania. So for the line in the sand, Andrew Balazs, and the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst, thanking you for listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Tony, send us home.
Deuces, bitches.
Andrew, we have to kill time because the studio's not working. It's for me to play the goodbye music. Andrew's gone too. Lovely. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you later. You have been listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. as Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Andrew Balazs bring you the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network online at thechairshot.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.